We will hop on the 7 line, as we do every Tuesday, head west, turn north on Morton Street, cruise on into the Fernandez Plaza. Into City Hall we go, and there's our great friend, the mayor, John Hamilton of the city of Bloomington. How's everything going here on this perfect Tuesday, the final Tuesday of summer? That's a difficult one to say.
That you got me with that one, Mike. I don't know if I'm ready for that. It's nice to be with you again today. All is good, a busy week as we lean into the fall schedules of everything, you know.
Well, and speaking of fall, this week and next will be the last two for the Kirkwood outdoor dining season. That's new this year because last year we went through the month of October.
I don't know. What do you think of that? You know, that's. I think we're still figuring that rhythm out. And if you have a good October day, everybody's going to go, wait a minute, what the heck?
I agree with you. Yeah. If you could predict the weather, and I could predict the weather, that would be great. But we know it's not going to be trending in a better direction. So
yeah.
I can make the argument either way, and folks with sidewalk cafe spots will have their sidewalk cafe spots. It just won't be the large street closures. We will then be able to run west to east and east to west from Walnut to the sample gates. So that will be different. But that's going to start on what, Sunday, August, or October 1st, is that right?
I think you probably have that right. I would have to confirm it online. But let me just between you and me,
okay,
Mike, and your listeners, I'd say, look, I won't be here for the next few years in this seat, but I do think that decision will evolve. I would not at all be surprised if Kirkwood becomes more permanently pedestrian focused, and there's always issues with that, and we've tried to really follow the lead of the merchants and the customers on that. But I think more and more it's not a through street. You know, there are always issues of accessibility you need to deal with, and public safety you need to deal with, and parking for you know, accessibility. But it's such a physical asset to use in different and better ways than just non-through traffic back and forth, that I think in the long haul that could get converted. It'll just be a process to do it in a big public engagement on that.
Well, and that process would involve what exactly? Is that a city? Is that a, well, it's all in Bloomington. Does the university have any say to that part of it? Who are the stakeholders in this besides the business, and how does that all come together? Who would be, what, you know, we're not building a convention center here. We're just closing off portions of a road. We all like to get our opinions out there. I know that.
I think what you would find is it would be a kind of a public city-led study of what the future of Kirkwood will be. And that may be looking at changing it physically too, you know, going curbless, or you know, we'd put the bollards in to help make things easier, and I think it would be a planning department led process to look at that. Now that's not planned in the next, you know, 12 months, so I don't believe, but I do think that discussion is good to have. That's kind of the long-term strategy for the city, and maybe, you know, this has given us some good data to see, well, how does it work? What do we like about it? What does it cause problems? So we've kind of got a test run going.
And that is, it is interesting, and to see all of the things. I think the other part of this, off the top of my head here, the more we do it, the more it's not a big deal and becomes a more of a way of life thing. Now, in the wintertime, everybody wants to park closer to the theater, closer to their favorite restaurants, closer to all of that.
You could have a rhythm to it. You could have a seasonal rhythm, which we do now. But anyway, I think it'll continue to evolve, and that's good. You know, you see, it is good to think of it as public space, and are we using it the way we all want to? You asked about stakeholders, of course. You know, yes, the university is a stakeholder. All the tenants are stakeholders. All the building owners are stakeholders, and all the public is stakeholders. This is publicly owned property, so. Anyway, it's just an example of I think the city's evolving. The pandemic kind of forced us to rethink some things, and now we can see what makes sense in the long haul.
Would this be a executive branch led, or would that be something the city council?
It would take the city council to close a street like that.
You know my rules. I want people to be as mad as hell as they want. I just want them to be mad at the right people.
Well, I think a city administration would probably lead on it, but it would ultimately take a council vote to close a street like that.
So there you have it, folks. Write your city council person and tell them your thoughts on this one way or another. And the city council's been busy. We saw I was gone after I spoke to you last week. I took off. I almost made it to our sister city, Palo Alto, but I was more north of there in Napa Valley for a quick weekend getaway. Yeah, it was gorgeous. It looks, if you look to the, there's no clouds, 78, no humidity. That's what it was every day we were there. It was absolutely, absolutely fantastic. So,
but pretty, but not as green as here, right?
Oh, everything is tan or yellow.
Beige. It's beige and yellow and tan, right?
Until November hits, and then the rainy season will turn everything green again. And but yes, we saw the some of the scars of the big fire out there in 2018. We saw the growth that you couldn't tell. Somebody said, well, that hill was all, you can't tell because Mother Nature's incredible. And now, since I've lost my complete train of thought on something about last week, I wasn't here last week.
City council,
and there was kerfuffle about what we're going to do in the right-of-ways on sidewalks or public areas. And I'm going to let you walk our listeners through the process because, again, I wasn't here. I just saw some quotes and some feedback of how long this took, and we've tabled this for the next. Who is against moving people's belongings off the sidewalk 3 inches so normal life can move on? So maybe I didn't read enough into this. Maybe I just saw a headline or a quote. But what are we doing here?
Yeah, it's kind of maybe an example of where sometimes legislation or proposed actions can become symbolic and weighty with a lot of things in them. In a way, what was being proposed, I think, by my administration and by our Public Works Department was we had, because of the current status of city ordinances, if somebody were to put a table or sit a bench across a sidewalk, whether it's downtown or anywhere, and just say, I kind of want to hang out here and block the sidewalk. Our current city code is not clear enough to say we have the right to remove that physical thing that somebody put in a sidewalk and says it's my property and I want to leave it there, which is, in a way, as you kind of hinted, it's kind of a no-brainer, right? That, well, it's a public sidewalk. We have to make sure people can use it.
Well, sadly, we don't have a rule on the book because we thought common sense would be the case, but if we can't use
it,
now we have
and
to...
It usually, and it is 99% of
correct.
The time. Because you go and say, hey, you can't block the sidewalk. They're like, okay. but sometimes it doesn't happen, and I think the city council... So the ordinance was to allow the city, and particularly, I mean, police, ultimately, somebody who has the authority of to take property from public right-of-way, to give that authority clearly. If somebody's blocking a sidewalk or a street, or for that matter, but blocking a sidewalk or a path that impedes more than half of it or impedes a wheelchair from getting by, for example, that kind of thing. And I think the council and others in the community felt this was too much because it was designed to harass people who don't have a home or are out in the public in general. And I think the people tried mightily to make clear this wasn't. It became a very symbolic discussion, and I think on a vote of 2-5 or 3-5 or something, the ordinance was not accepted. Now, at one level, it's okay because this actually does not come up very often at all. As you know, mostly common sense prevails, and we always try to de-escalate anything like that, and that will work 99% of the time. I do think if it were to come up or somebody were to say, well, I'm going to prove it, then you have to get a court order. It can take a while, and by then you'd have the public saying, how come you can't clear that sidewalk? You know, why do you have to wait a day for a court order? But we'll see. It became more symbolic, I think.
Well, I'm fine with the symbolism, but if we're just asking people to to move over so people can walk up and down the street. I don't think that's a social issue. That sounds more of a, this is what we do in a societal issue, and this is my opinion on it. So how did this spiral out of control? Why? I'm asking you why for a group of nine people. Let me take that back. What is moving forward? What is hoped to come out of the next ordinance that will keep sidewalks? Well, we must have an ordinance that says you can't sleep in the street or put your stuff in the street. Can we just copy and paste that?
Yeah, I think it became, you may remember, it was a couple years ago that we had a very close vote on whether to allow camping in city parks, right? It was 5-4 not to allow that. There are people who feel very strongly that if people don't have a home or a house to go to, then we have to make something available. And I think we have very intensive efforts to try to make sure everybody can have a safe place to live. And I think some of that disagreement flowed up in this issue too. Look, you know, the city works very, very hard along with many partners in government and in private sector and nonprofits to help deal with people who are struggling with housing, struggling with mental illness and addiction and other things like that. And we obviously have continued to face those issues like every city in America. But we're also just trying to take some practical steps to make sure public spaces are available for public uses. And sometimes issues can rise up. I think there were some commenters who came from the public who were concerned about this, and city council decided to step away from it.
Mayor John Hamilton is our guest today, and I guess you had a busy week last week because the big old sign that we talked about on Tuesday, that seemed to irk some people as well when we were just trying to close the sidewalk off to get things constructed there. That's opened another bag of worms, can of worms. Well, or why are we picking on worms? What do they have to do with anything? But here we are again. The part I saw was, you know, Adam Wason is, hey, this meeting is about this, not that. It seems like everything is spiraling into different directions, no matter where we look.
You know, sometimes I think people want a chance to voice their views and let their opinions be heard, and I think public sessions can be a place where that happens. You're talking about the gateway on the north side of the city, and that's been in the works for a long time, and it's actually funded and contracted and under construction. The actual gateway itself is under construction, but some people hadn't heard of it, and sometimes when people hear about it, even at the 11th hour, they want to make clear their views about it, and that happened. But I'm confident that will get resolved, and gateways are I think it's a good thing for the city. You see the university doing it and other cities doing it, and I think it's a way for Bloomington to be proud and welcoming people and stand up and for who we are and show pride in our community. And I think this gateway will be viewed very positively down the road. Sometimes people don't like change, I get that. But it was part of the bicentennial back in 2018 that the council voted for, and we had displays in City Hall lobby about it. You know,
yeah.
Anyway,
you're right.
You know, not everybody sees it.
And exactly.
We had over, I think, 60 or 100 comments that were online feedback and all that. But then that means a whole bunch of people didn't comment. And they decided to comment at the end. But I think we'll work through it.
Well, let's make sure everybody's aware that there's going to be a new jail built somewhere in town.
There you go.
We've tried this before and we'll try again, but a letter went out for the people that live around Summit Elementary, the Monroe County Commissioner's community conversation on the potential jail site will be held on Wednesday, September 20th, 6:30 p.m. Summit Elementary, Sunday, September 24th, 3 p.m. at the RCA Community Park. Those presentations will be the same. You can pick one or another. What involvement at all does the city have with this? And who is listening to who? Who is leading this charge? Again, I want people to be upset. I just want them to be upset at the right people.
Well, let me look. This is a really interesting issue, and I'm very sympathetic that it's a complicated thing. I've occasionally, Mike, I've thought, okay, what if Mayor, what if you were in charge of this jail and the criminal justice system and oversaw it, which is true in a lot of cities, right? A bigger city would have that. And how would you deal with this? And it's complicated. There's no question about it. But I do think one thing I would do differently and that I wish our community would do, and I think a lot of people in the community would like it, is that when we are talking about a new jail, we would actually lead that whole process with an effort to talk about what can we do to reduce the need for a jail. We're going to be investing a lot of money in a jail, as we need to, but what can we do to invest to avoid the need to incarcerate people? What kind of mental health services can we provide? What kind of substance use disorder services can we provide? What kind of job placement services can we provide? What kind of health is needed? And look, we see this all through the city, and you have people acting out that jail is not the right place for them, but we don't have enough facilities. And this is a national, it's a state, but it's also a local issue. And so I am very sympathetic that these are complicated issues. I believe we ought to lead with, let's invest in the things that help people not end up in jail or not go back to jail. Then let's talk about the 3 or 4 year long process to build a new jail. Where it ought to be is complicated. I would like it to be downtown. Does it really need to be as big as some of these plans have it? It looks like a state prison almost. And I know it's complicated, and you don't have a single leader that can move that forward at the county level. A lot of different voices need to be heard, but it's. I think we're backing our way into it in a little unfortunate way.
How is the financing for what your angle or your vision is for this program? How many cooks are in that stew?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I mean, again, look, this is not my project. It's a county-led project. The county runs the public health department, and the county runs the criminal justice system. The judges have a role. The sheriff has a role. The commissioners oversee all of that. The county council oversees all those budgets. I believe that we could do a parallel effort where we're doing major investments in public health, particularly focused on the needs for mental health services, the need for substance use disorder, which includes the need for housing and other things that you can have a lot of partners help with. And I just think you do it in parallel. And look, ultimately, you know, we pay a lot of money in taxes to help make sure our community is safe. And that does both of those things, public health and criminal justice. I just think we need to think about them together a little more creatively. Because look, Mike, here's a fact. We incarcerate way more people per capita than almost any country on the planet. And that's not because Americans are particularly problematic. We just have a system that puts too many people in that setting instead of helping solve problems. And that's just a fact. And I think we can move that needle if we do more investment in those other kinds of things.
Well, that'll be an interesting topic for discussion for the next, what, decade? Five?
It will.
It's not going to be built in a day. It's not going to be. Somebody won't want it in their backyard. We know how this goes, but again, it's always funding. It's always funding. There's the old axiom is follow the money, find the answers, or find the solutions, and it's probably not much different in this case either. The voice you hear is Mayor John Hamilton. He joins us every Tuesday just after 4:05 to get caught up on the big stories making news here in the city of Bloomington. And we spoke last Tuesday. Last Wednesday, the annexation lawsuit, the city has dismissed its constitutional claims related to areas in 1A and 1B. Thankfully, you are here to provide that translation for me.
You got to get out your annexation folder that you built up over the years.
My whiteboard is about 6 miles. My whiteboard is actually larger than the annexation area. Talking about annexation, what was the old days? Was it the 2 mile fringe in the old days? What was that called?
Yeah, that's right. We had the 2 mile fringe where city zoning was extended 2 miles to help.
Why don't we just do that every other year and be done with it?
That would make a lot of sense, Mike. We had that 2 mile, and the whole idea was you put city zoning in place 2 miles outside the boundaries because you're eventually going to be part of the city. And
yeah.
My predecessor gave up the 2 mile zone, and anyway, the rest is history. But so
now we're trying to make new history, and the new history involves dropping the lawsuit. Why did the city decide to do that, and how do you think this will advance annexation moving forward?
Yeah, that's so. Ultimately, the precipitating event was the, as people may remember, the West Side 1A and 1B, the two big West Side areas, were didn't have enough remonstrators to stop annexation, but they had enough to get to court to have a trial about whether annexation is a good thing. And we were looking forward to that, and that trial was set for November. And then the precipitating event was that the judge in charge of that trial said, "You know what? I'm just going to wait and hold off on this trial until the constitutional issues are decided over the whole annexation question, because if the city wins on those, then I don't need to hold a trial." And our contention to the judge was, look, judge, that's going to take 3 or 4 years probably to get that resolved, and annexation delayed is annexation denied. We need to move forward with this. We've been waiting for 6 years, 7 years already. So when the judge decided to stay the case, we are trying to appeal that, but we ultimately looked at it and said, what's the most important thing about annexation? And it's getting it resolved. And actually, the West Side is a really important area because that's where a lot of development and growth is happening or wants to happen. So we made the hard decision to say, let's drop the constitutional claims as to the West Side, 1A, 1B. We'll drop those out of that constitutional litigation, which is a few years probably to litigate, and just get to trial, because we think we'll win the trial, it will get things resolved, it will help us be orderly as we move forward with development on the West Side. So that's what we decided. We got to wait for a few procedural things to shake through, but we expect and hope that that West Side judge, the judge in charge of the West Side case, will say, okay, the constitutional issues won't resolve this case, so let's go to trial and get it resolved.
I'm glad.
Does that explain it?
Yeah, I'm glad you're here to explain it, though. That's makes it a lot easier for all of us listening. Mayor John Hamilton is our guest this afternoon, and that you're trying to just get it resolved totally. That's the whole point of this, right?
For the West Side, it is.
For the West Side.
And, you know, and frankly, that, you know, the islands, the three little islands in the city are a pain for everybody in a lot of ways. You know, snow plows don't go in there, and sanitation trucks drive by there, and police don't technically have jurisdiction there, and all that stuff, which is kind of crazy. But they're quite small and isolated, and they're not changing. On the West Side, on the other hand, you've got really intense growth. You've got potential future new growth that needs sewers, that needs services, and so we want to get that resolved as quickly as we can. And just to remind everybody, I know people have different views on this, but the majority of the properties all out there signed contracts that said, we will agree to be part of the city when you ask us to be part of the city in exchange for sewer service. And that's what the state, you know, billixed up and changed, and we're trying to get that resolved. But practically speaking, we just want to get it resolved as quickly as we can.
Now, another public meeting that is on the books, not this Thursday, but a week from on September 28th, a public meeting to begin gathering information to develop a long-term master plan to guide the future of the building trades park will be 6:30 council chambers on Thursday, September 28th. Building Trades Park is across from the old hospital ground, which will be right next door to the Hopewell Center. What is the impetus behind this?
So thank you for bringing that up. This is an example where the public can weigh in early. Don't wait till the 11th hour.
Don't wait till it's built and you don't like the paint color.
Yeah. So, you know, that's an old historic park. It's a beautiful location, and the Parks Department does a great job of planning and involving the public. They have a 5-year strategic plans they renew every 5 years, and then they look at individual parks. So this will change. This park's going to become a different kind of place with hundreds and hundreds of housing units near it. So it's kind of think about what should it look like over the coming years. So as well, there are, of course, immediate neighbors right there now who enjoy what's there. We looked at a futsal court. You know what a futsal is?
Yeah, it's a soccer without grass.
On like a basketball side.
Correct.
Court. We looked at, is that a good place for a futsal court there, you know, or what else, what kind of amenities should be there? And as you know, Hopewell itself will have a new greenway that's public public park space. So that's the start of that planning.
And, can public parks be changed into housing developments or quads or trays or whatever else? I'm trying to think of all the buzzwords that gets people's dander up. How many times has it happened where we've had a park locally that is turned back into something else?
So that's a good question. I know in my tenure, generally, we're pretty jealous of the public green space.
Right.
Because once you give it up, it's gone, right? It's hard to get it back. So we're very, very stingy about that. Now, there is one example, though, in Switchyard Park. When we bought all of that, you may remember that on the far west side, just below the entrance off of Rogers, we allowed a 16-unit affordable apartment building to be built on Park's property, but it was right at the edge. It was, you know, right next to the street, and we thought it was a good way to help more people have access to the park. That was out of 62 acres, maybe half an acre we gave, you know, to that kind of thing. More generally, what we like is what you see on the other side of the Switchyard Park, where it's private property next to a park, where we helped a 64-unit housing project go in. It's getting built right now, Retreat at Switchyard, just south of the entrance off of College Walnut. And so we more like to see development around public parks rather than give up space of the parks.
Makes sense. And there'll be plenty of park space within the Hopewell District, correct?
Yep. Yes, sir.
And you're across the street and two blocks from getting up the trail to the other. Well, not maybe it's a little bit longer than that. But anyhow, yes, you're right there in all of it. But that is fantastic land. So if you want to have a say, we'll remind you next week as well. That's Thursday the 28th, 6:30 in council chambers for that. And it would not be a program in September if you and I got together and did not talk about the Bloomington Parks and Recreation annual pumpkin launch. Remember. No fireworks, no fluids, no compressed air, no uranium, no nothing.
But records can be broken and fun can be had.
It's coming up October 21st. We want everyone to register by October 9th. bloomington.in.gov/pumpkin launch. You can see the specifications. So for you mechanical engineers out there, which there's no competition on this radio show, these two guests are not going to be in that arena. We're going to be there to watch. We're going to be there to watch all the great things that are happening. We want to remind you the annual pumpkin launch, October 21st, is a great celebration as well. Food trucks and music and all kinds of fun things that go along with that. So we'll tie that.
I'm ready for a live broadcast if you are, Mike.
Oh, on a Saturday morning. Well, that's homecoming. That's good. You know what? That's Let me just tell you how busy our town is going to be on that weekend. Friday the 20th will be the homecoming parade at 5:30. And that will start in the Simon Scott Assembly Hall parking lot, go to Woodlawn and around and about there and go back to the Simon Scott. At 7:30 will be Hoosier Hysteria opening the doors to Simon Scott Assembly Hall for the men's and women's basketball celebration.
Oof.
While that's happening, at 7 p.m., Jerry Seinfeld will be playing the first of two shows at the IU Auditorium. He'll be back at 9 o'clock for show number two. High school football sectionals for Edgewood will be that night. And then you've got homecoming the next day with Rutgers in town for football. Well, other than that, we've got
pumpkins,
nothing going on.
And pumpkins.
And then pumpkins all morning. So if you want to stay away from the homecoming crowd, per se, well, you can get crowded with homecoming pumpkins. We'll have to think about that. We'll have to think about that moving forward.
Oh, there's a lot going on.
Well, it should be. And that's the great part of it as well. Some of it is growing pains. Some of it is just pains. But we're moving forward, that's for sure. Come back next Tuesday. I bet we won't have a blank piece of paper either.
I'll look forward to it. I hope everybody has a good week. Enjoy the weather and the city. Thanks.
Thanks, John. I really appreciate it. Mayor John Hamilton joins us every Tuesday just after 4:05. Well, we got a lot of things covered today, folks. And again, we don't care. Well, I won't speak for the mayor. I don't care if you're upset or you don't like something. Just get mad at the right people. You know, you only have so much vitriol you can carry around with you. Make sure you're taking it to the right spots, right?